And now we're going to be talking about Apollo 17.
The Moon's 60s, those long heady days. We thought that the future was moments away. We never expected that once we had won, we'd set it behind us and say we were done. Armstrong and Aldrin, the first to set down a single small step, there was watched the world round. Do you remember it happened so fast? Neil was the first, but Gene was the last. Armstrong and Aldrin, Conrad and Bean, Shepard and Mitchell were living the dream. Scott, Irwin, Young, Duke, Cernan and Schmidt, that's every last person who journeyed deep that trip. A hot Navy pilot, he flew it for 5,000 hours in the air, maybe more. A Gemini 9, he performed the VA. Only my will did he care. Be the day. But he didn't die, now he rejoined the crew. And on 10th Apollo, the lander he flew. Imagine the heartbreak to see it so near. The gray lunar rubble that rocked bleak frontier. I'm trying out, and everyone knows poor Michael Collins, who got so damn close. But who remembers Cernan and Smith, the very last people to journey that trip? Neil was the first to step on Selene. Somehow they lived on Apollo 13. And when the last of Apollo did land, Gene finally stepped on that great lunar sand. I'll always feel sorry for Eugene Cernan, the last man to walk on the moon. A singular honor he'd rather not own, but I don't think we're going back soon. Maybe someday we will try it again, this time to stay with brave women and men. Until then, remember, if you wouldn't mind, poor Eugene Cernan, the last of his kind. Armstrong and Aldrin, heroes of yore, doing something never been done before. But I would honor Cernan and Smith, the very last people to journey that trip. The last 12 people to journey that trip. Thank you.
On the Space Show, that was Mark Horning with his song Last. And if you were listening to the lyrics, you'll know it's about Apollo 17 and Gene Cernan, more of which is coming up on the Space Show.
88.3 Southern FM.
Where you are listening to the Space Show. I am Andrew Rennie. There were 9 manned missions to the moon during the Apollo program. The first two, Apollo 8 and Apollo 10, orbited the moon but did not land. In 1969, Apollos 11 and 12 landed. Apollo 13 was planned to be a landing but exploded on the way. The crippled spacecraft looped behind the moon and barely made it back to Earth. Apollos 14, 15 and 16 all succeeded in landing, with each mission becoming more ambitious. Then, 50 years ago today, the final Apollo lunar landing mission was launched. Aboard were Gene Cernan as commander, geologist Harrison Schmitt as the lunar module pilot, and Ronald Evans as command module pilot. But you already know that if you were listening to the lyrics of that song that we just played. Now, Cernan and Schmitt were to land on the moon, and Evans was to keep vigil in lunar orbit. Well, at least 2 of the 3 astronauts on that mission have been in Melbourne, and the Space Show has met them. And we're going to hear now a bit of a history of the moon, as told by Harrison Schmitt when he was here in Melbourne. In fact, I think this talk is when he was in Frankston.
Let me just give you a very, very short summary. That summary is that the samples that we retrieved from the moon, their analysis here on Earth, the additional data that has come from several automated or unmanned missions of the moon, Clementine, Lunar Prospector, and the like, have resulted since Apollo in a very detailed understanding of the history of the moon. A history that goes from about 4.6 billion years ago to the present, but a history mostly which was over at about 3 billion years ago. And the reason that's important to us here on Earth is that that's the part of Earth history that we have a devil of a time reading in the rocks of the Earth. We are getting a little bit smarter with that, partly because we have insights that we've gained from the moon, but primarily just because the Earth has been so active, volcanically, in terms of erosion of oceans and streams and the like. We just have lost that history here on Earth for the most part. And it's a very, very important part of our history, because that's the time, that period from about 4.6 billion years ago to about 3.8 billion years ago, when life was evolving on this planet. And we just, until we went to the moon, had no insight into what the history or what the environment of the early solar system was like during that period of time. And now we do know. The moon has told us that. What was happening on the moon clearly was happening on the Earth, but in a very water-rich environment. And those insights have been absolutely fundamental to a lot of the discussion we now have about the origins of life. And in fact, there was a conference in Hamilton Island when we first got here. It was the first couple of events that I had where this was one of the primary topics of conversation and of discussion. It was a so-called bioastronomy conference, and understanding what the history of the early solar system was and its impact on the evolution of life was extremely important to those kinds of discussions. So that's one of the things the moon has told us. In addition, the samples have told us that there are energy resources on the moon as well as other resources, which are going to be extraordinarily valuable not only here on Earth sometime in the future, but also to future space travelers. Just from the science point of view, the exercise was hardly trivial, and it is increasingly exciting to those of us who like to study the Earth as well as think about the future of human populations on this Earth and their need for energy.
That was astronaut geologist Harrison Schmitt talking about the findings of the moon from the Apollo program. Gene Cernan has also been here in Melbourne, and Peter Arwood from the Space Show caught up with Gene and had this conversation with him.
You did something no other astronaut had ever done in declining a seat to be on Apollo 16 to walk on the moon. Could you tell us about that?
That's the biggest risk I ever took in a space program, maybe in my life, as far as, you know, turning down an opportunity like that. Yeah, I had flown Gemini 9. I flew Apollo 10. I was back up on an earlier Apollo flight. I backed up Alan Shepard in a command seat on Apollo 14. Why I had the courage to do that, I'll never know. But you're right. I had an opportunity to fly on the moon, actually a flight before Apollo 17, but it would have been from the right seat. Why was that important? And my boss couldn't believe it. Deke Slayton said, "You're turning down," and he never really guaranteed anything, but he almost did this time. "You're turning down a chance to walk on the moon for a flight in the left seat, for a seat as a commander of a spacecraft for a flight that may never come about. Or if it does, you may not be selected to sit in that seat." And I told him yes, and I tell you why. It's not that I felt that I was better than anybody else. It's not that I felt that I earned it more than anybody else. But I had to prove, given a chance, I had to prove to myself that I was good enough to do it, that I was good enough to command a flight and be successful that landed on the moon. You know, I'd been an underdog. As I said earlier, I didn't apply for the program only because I didn't meet all their qualifications, flight time and test pilot school. And I had to prove something to myself. Given a chance, I had to prove something, not to you, but to myself. And when I stepped on the moon, the first steps had already been taken, but those were my steps, and nobody could take them away from me at that point in time, or even today. And it was then that I proved to myself, I can do it, and I did it. And don't ask me, I mean, it was a risky decision on my part, because, you know, I've always said fate has a big hand in where you end up in this world, and it sure did on this occasion. I thought I'd almost ripped my knickers and never would fly again.
It's a fascinating insight into you as a person, Captain Cernan. So how long between you declining that seat on Apollo 16 and being appointed for the commander role of Apollo 17, was it? That must have been a very stressful, lie awake at night type of period for you.
Well, you know, even when I got the assignment as backup commander on Apollo 14, I had absolutely no assurances of any kind that I'd fly an Apollo flight again, much less being a left seat on Apollo 17. I go back to the why me, and I said this in my book, and I don't take it back. I said, if I were my boss, and I was competing against Dick Gordon, a highly qualified, good friend of mine, highly qualified guy, could have been commander of Apollo 17. Plus, it was decreed that we had one lunar geologist in the program, and he was on Dick Gordon's backup crew for 15, and he was going to fly. Right. There was no doubt he was going to fly. We knew it, and why would you break up a crew like Deke did and fly me and Ron Evans and put Jack on our crew? I don't know. Why me? I don't know. But I don't know. I just thank God that he made that decision. I don't know what stirred him on to do it, but you go out and do it. My dad always used to say, just go out and do your best and someday you're going to surprise yourself. He was right.
And that was Gene Cernan, the last person to walk on the moon, the 11th person to step on the moon, but the last person to walk on the moon, Gene Cernan, in conversation with the space show's very own Peter Aylward. Now, Peter went on to ask him about the relationship with Australia.
One thing that you probably are aware of is that Australia, back in the 60s and continuing to this day, has a fairly small but very critical role in the deep space network. Were you, as part of your duties in your missions, aware of the Australian involvement at Honeysuckle Creek, at Tidmanbilla, at Carnarvon in Australia?
Yeah.
And is there anything you'd like to say to the people that work there? Because there'll be a number of those people at your movies, I'm sure.
Let me tell you, we couldn't have done what we did without Australia. God put that creator put Australia in the right place. I love Australia. I'm really anxious to get back to the people back there. They're so wonderful. You are all as much a part of the space program as we were. I've always said we weren't in that spacecraft alone, and I believe it, because I think anyone who had anything to do with it, anyone who put a bolt in a heat shield, anyone who worked with us on the surface from Perth or anywhere, was on that board, that spacecraft, with us. I can remember one time on Gemini 9, I had a lot of trouble with my, my workload, my heart rate. I overpowered the cooling system in the spacecraft. My visor became fogged. I was outside the spacecraft day and night, a couple revolutions around the Earth. And one time I knew I had to be over Australia, and I took my nose and I rubbed a little hole in the fog so I could see through the helmet, through the visor, and sure enough, there were the lights of Australia, and that gave me a level of comfort that you cannot. I don't know if you can relate to it or not, but it was significant to me.
Yeah, I can.
And that was Gene Cernan in conversation with Peter Aylward. And we have more from that conversation on next week's The Space Show. Let's hear, as I said, we're going to have more about Apollo 17 next week and the week after. But we're going to now hear some music from a film about the last man on the moon. And it's the original motion picture soundtrack. The composition is by Lorne Balfe. And this particular theme is looking towards the future of the lunar exploration. Music from the movie The Last Man on the Moon. That's the original motion picture soundtrack by Lorne Balfe. It came out in 2015, and that was the track called The Future. And let's go out. We've still got a bit of time left, so we'll go out with a track called Apollo 17. You've been listening to The Space Show. I'm Andrew Rennie, and we have more about Apollo 17 and the Artemis mission and all sorts of other things on next week's The Space Show.